what I'm excited about to share with you right now is the store. I got the book, The End of All Evil. I got plenty of copies. So if you click on this link, either this book here or this link, it will take you to a payment page. You get the book, and I send you some End Evil podcast stickers. A new exciting thing is happening. My book is coming out. I just finished writing it. This July 20th, 21st, I'm supposed to be getting copies in my hand. And so you can right now click on this link and pre-order that copy that I'll sign for you. And I will also send you some stickers. Or you can get both. And this is a limited time deal that I've got on my website right now. You can order my book, the author's copy signed, and you can get The End of All Evil for $45 for both. And that link is right here on the End Evil store.
Hello, this is Chris Jansen. Welcome to the End Evil Podcast.
Excited about to share with you right now is the store. I got the book, The End of All Evil. I got plenty of copies. So if you click on this link, either this book here or this link, it will take you to a payment page. You get the book and I send you some End Evil podcast stickers. A new exciting thing is happening. My book is coming out. I just finished writing it. This July 20th, 21st, I'm supposed to be getting copies in my hand. And so you can right now click on this link and pre-order that copy that I'll sign for you. And I will also send you some stickers. Or you can get both. And this is a limited time deal that I've got on my website right now. You can order my book, the author's copy signed, and you can get The End of All Evil for $45 for both. And that link is right here on the End Evil store. Hello, friends. Welcome to the End Evil Podcast. I'm here with Chris Nelson. Evil is the destruction of freedom. Thanks for joining me, Chris. It's good to have you here. And haven't had you on End Evil Podcast as a solo guest. I don't know if we ever did that. If not, it's long overdue. People need to check out evolveconsciousness.org. Your life depends on it, and everybody else's life depends on it. So do that as soon as possible if you haven't yet. And Chris, can you just maybe start off by telling us a little bit about what you're currently working on? I know you do a lot of what we call the one great work, and we can define that a little bit into this conversation. But for now, maybe just talk about the things you've been working on recently. And so people get to know you a little bit more that don't already, which hopefully everybody does.
Okay, sure. Thanks for having me. Good to be here. And yeah, so I'm Chris Nelson. My site is evolveconsciousness.org. My work primarily deals with causal factors, not really symptoms at all. And that's what people need to understand, the causal factors, ultimately to reach the understanding of objective morality, otherwise known as natural law, and whatever encompasses that understanding. So the goal is to be more moral beings so that we can have true freedom. And so a lot of my earlier work was more in the psychological or consciousness realms and understanding foundational things like I did a lot on what is truth and what does truth mean and falsity. And I did stuff on causality and consciousness and truth. A lot of things related to consciousness and how we, our free will and our choices, and a lot on the trivium as well. I focused a lot on that. I did a four-part series on a four or five-part article, and then I made it into an audio on the Trivium. And I also did philosophical metaphysics, the fundamentals of the Trivium method, detailing some of Aristotle's work, the categorizations of Aristotle that helps people to understand how we categorize things and join them from in similarities and differences, and understanding more how to think. So a lot of the stuff I did was trying to understand more how we do our thinking so that we can be better thinkers.
How long have you had evolveconsciousness.org going now?
2014, since the end of 2013, but it took me a month or two to like start writing some articles.
Wow, and, so you're getting to your 10th anniversary, or just, you just passed it, right?
11th, yeah.
Yeah, wow, that's awesome. Yeah. I've been seeing, I've popped in on a couple of these recent episodes you've done, the One Great Work Launchpad, and so as I understand, that's kind of intended to help people get started, right?
Yeah, that's the Great Work Launchpad is an effort to, like you said, try to get people initiated into doing the great work. So the first one was on awakening, and Brandon Spencer was on, and we talked about how we awakened to that ultimate goal and purpose in life. And the second one was on initiation, so how we got initiated, how we got started into it. And then I went into what I initially termed barriers to initiation, facing the mirror. And then I just shortened it to shadow work, because that's what it is, the barriers to initiation, facing the mirror. Well, that's all the shadow work stuff that needs to be done. So far, there's been 10 episodes of the Great Work Launchpad and 8 in the subcategory of the shadow work. I'm going to have the 11th on Wednesday, dealing with what we've mentioned so far, learning how to think. So recently we did...
what time do you run those at?
9 p.m. Eastern,
6 p.m. Pacific.
6 p.m. Pacific.
On Wednesday. So if folks want to check that out, this show will probably air this coming Thursday. So I guess at that point you would have missed last night. But I think that's really awesome you're doing that. And maybe we can just talk a little bit about what is the One Great Work. I've done a great episode with the One Great Work Warriors on explaining that from all of our joint point of view. But I'd love to hear from your words. What's the One Great Work, and why did you get started doing it?
So the One Great Work, that is a term that comes from Mark Passio, or you could call it the True Great Work. And I guess the reason that it's the One Great Work or the True Great Work is to distinguish it from just the Great Work. I just call it the Great Work. But there is another part of the great work, which is the shadow work. So I think in the philosophy of alchemy, that's what they referred to as the great work, was just that alchemical process. So changing of the self. And the alchemy is like the lower nature of the lower aspect of yourself, who you are and what you can become, your higher potential, going from lead or bronze to silver to gold. And so those are symbolic references to that process of self-transformation. So you can call that the lower great work, but I just refer to the great work as the next step after you work on yourself, is to help other people do that same work. So you put out information to get people to understand the importance of them needing to change, because that's the problem we have in the whole world, is that the world is the way it is because of the behavior of everyone in the aggregate, and that's a reflection of their inner state, so their mental, psychological, emotional states, which produces the behaviors, and that's the world that we live in, the human world that is created. So to affect that change in the world, well, all the individuals have to change. So after you change, you've done that inner great work, but you have to do the outer great work, which is referred to as the one great work or the true great work by Pasio's definitions. And these, as he defines it in one of his slides, he has, what is the true great work? Well, it is ending slavery. And that's what it is. Ending slavery can be synonymous with ending immorality or ending evil, such as the book by Jeremy Locke and the name of your podcast. So that's the goal of the great work, the one great work, the true great work, is to influence other people to take on the work of changing themselves. So doing the inner great work, and also getting them to do the outer great work, so that it's like a feedback loop that's affecting and influencing reality to change. Because as you do your work on yourself, you change your behavior, and then as you do the great work, the outer great work, to influence others, well, then that creates content that didn't exist and influence potential in the internet that people can come across and be impacted and influence themselves, for them to take in that information, integrate it, and do the work on themselves. And then they can do that process that you did to put it out, and everyone can engage in that, and it becomes like a snowball where we eventually become a big snowball of changing the world, so that we don't have evil or slavery or immorality in the aggregate overall, and have the true freedom and work to preserve it.
I love that we both share, besides an awesome name, a love for the That's symbology true. Of the Tree of Life. And you're using the word integration. And to me, you know, that symbolism has always stood out for me. Like you're talking about a tree, you can just imagine right in the scene of a tree, this whole ecosystem, right? The leaves fall from the tree, the branches provide home for the birds, the bugs crawl up inside of the tree, the leaves fall on the ground, that becomes the cover for the ground that allows, you know, the mulch that the plants grow out of, that the birds eat, et cetera, you know, and we all understand this concept, but how do we begin to live this concept instead of just observing it? And it's strange, in fact, that we're not already more integrated. It's strange that we're so separate and that we have to rediscover reality as I'm seeing it. And I've become myself able to stand back and look at this tree of life symbol of our experience here in this reality. And my interpretation is that reality itself, the structure of reality, that morality is a fundamental principle that guides all reality, all life in this reality, is like you're saying, by its inherent birth into this realm, it has to follow the law of freedom, as you're describing. And I know that's a project you've been working on with your series as well. The law of freedom, helping people understand, is not just about me. I'm tied in with all the other branches and roots and parts of the tree, and whatever part of the tree I am is affected by whatever's going on in the forest. You know, if there's a fire and I'm the bark, I can't just run away from the fire. And that's just the state of the reality we're in. So that kind of brings me to, I think, the heart of the conversation I'm hoping to have with you today is, what's really struggle is that it seems really simple what we're talking about, the one great work and ending slavery, right? That seems so simple and so basic. Shouldn't everyone just understand that? And probably most people would nod their head and say they get it. And then you and I would be like, nah, we got a lot to talk about. And so we have to find ourselves breaking things down into smaller and smaller bits, and trying to find the most minute little steps to help explain and illuminate all the trappings and stopping points and obstacles on the journey to having these inner awakening realizations to what this really means. And there's so much depth to it. And so I'm curious what you have to say to what are all the problems? Maybe you can kind of describe some of the things that keep people from being able to see this deeper layer we're talking about. So what I just said makes some sense.
Yeah. So the deeper layer,
the obstacles. You're referring, what is keeping people from seeing something that's so obvious? That's a simple way to ask the question. I'm trying to say.
And that obvious thing would be the need to be moral.
And the importance of objective morality, and the great work, as we're saying, that's a core. We all should be working on that. Why wouldn't we be? Isn't that what we're here for? Like, isn't that so simple and basic? Why do we have to make all these episodes of podcasts about natural law and explaining objective and all this? You know, why is it not obvious? You know, why is it so complicated when it's so simple?
Well, it's simple in a way. But it is complicated. So, you know, you could say a partial truism that the truth is simple. Well, a truth is simple. But when you look at the totality of the truth, well, what is the truth? The truth is a word that references everything. Because that's what the truth is. You're not talking about a truth. But when you're talking about the idea of truth or the truth, it's everything. And truth is a synonym for reality. Truth is a synonym for existence. So whatever is, well, that's what the truth is. And it could be that things change. So something that is now won't be there tomorrow or 100 years from now. But at a specific moment in time, something is, and that's the way it is. And so that's what's in existence, and that's what's in reality. So the getting down to the simplicity and complexity, well, that does require detail because, you know, if we were taught a lot of these things when we were growing up, then it wouldn't be as complicated. But it's not as obvious as seeing a yellow, a white plate and identifying it as a white plate. And it's not a black plate. It's not a red plate. It's not a blue plate. Etc. So all these things that we're talking about related to morality and understanding ourselves, self-knowledge and shadow work, well, these are things that are more hidden because they're not, you know, obvious right in front of your eyes, something physical for you to just easily see with your senses. It requires processing of information, processing of yourself, reflecting reality back on yourself on reality, and trying to understand what is going on. So that understanding requires processing. That's the part of the trivium, is that middle part of whichever system you're looking at. It could be grammar, logic, rhetoric, or knowledge, understanding, wisdom, or input, processing, output. Well, that middle part is the processing and the understanding. So you need to engage in processing. You need to engage in greater thinking, greater degrees of thinking. That's not just a given because we need to be trained in optimal modalities of thinking as opposed to just memorizing things going through school, like you were talking about geography, you know, pointless, and just memorizing things to pass tests, to get a good grade, to get out of school so that you can get a job and make money. And that's the purpose of the outcome-based education. It's not to teach us how to think. It's to teach us what to think and to have certain so-called facts repeated so that we can regurgitate them. And
yeah, I've often referred to that, you know, conceptual versus instructional thinkers. You know, some people really, especially on the job site, I notice they really require instructions. And if you give them concepts, they can't get anything done with that. Other people, if you just give them instructions and they're a conceptual thinker, they get, you know, it's kind of the other way around. You know, they need to understand the concepts so that they can start taking instructions. I'm more that type. You know, I want to know the concept. I want to understand why things are the way they are. But I've come to recognize that a lot of other folks are not necessarily that way. That curiosity that I have that drives me to want to look at every puzzle, actually, I think it's scary to a lot of folks because there's so many puzzles and so many questions that they don't want to even approach them because it seems like maybe hard work. And I understand why. we have all these, I called it unity of opposites in my book. This world has contradiction, dualism, polarities, dichotomy. You know, there's all these words, that paradox, that we use to describe this true aspect of life where sometimes both things are true and not true at the same time. And it depends on where you're standing, the context. And if you're looking at things in terms of, if we're born and people tell us, here's the way things are, and you just kind of go on living with that assumption, you might miss, you know, a large percentage of what reality really is. And that has a lot to do with our perception. But I think really what I'm trying to get at is principles, fundamentals, foundational ideas. How do we even know where to start in this wacky world when there's people out there saying that stealing is normal? It's okay to rob people from the day they're born, and it's okay for people to be bound to contracts that they never signed. Things like this, where, or religious practices where you have to do it because people told you, otherwise you're going to go to hell, or, you know, your kids are going to be abused, or some terrible, like all these wacky systems of thought. And so people aren't getting the fundamentals in the very beginning. And so what we're trying to do is rebuild the fundamentals, the very beginning of what everything is. And so that's kind of what brought to my mind epistemology. I feel like you're a really good person at laying the bricks of foundation to help people understand the next thing. So maybe you could start us off, like, where would you start someone off who's really kind of like confused by all this, doesn't understand what we're talking about? How do we build a foundation for people?
Yeah, good question. It's related to like what you've been talking about so far. So you mentioned, you know, people are confused, or they don't know where to start, or they don't want to ask questions, and it's like too much work. Well, that's the whole problem, is the mindset of people. So it's complex. You know, you were getting at that, and that's bringing it back to how things are complex. Is, you know, why, how does this work? Why does it work that way? Conceptual versus instructional. And it's all tying into the same aspect of learning how to think and knowing how to think. And that's what people don't know how to do. So all these answers, you know, we could say, okay, the fundamentals are, here's a one page sheet with bullet points of fundamentals. And then would that solve things for people? Well, not really, because then they would just believe it, like, do this, don't do that. But if you're not asking why, then you don't really understand why it's true. And that's what we're getting at, is why is something true, or why is it not true? And if you're asking questions, or someone's giving you information, and like I mentioned, we could provide them with, here are the fundamentals, and this is how you're supposed to live, or whatever, and this is what this is. And but how do they know that that's true? And that's one of the things, is people have to know what truth is to get to the truth of something. Well, what is even truth? And once again, that's not taught in school. None of these things are really taught in school. And so if you don't even know what the truth is, then how do you know you even have the truth about something? And if you don't know the answers to that, then essentially everything that you have is pretty much a belief. And that's what we have, is a world of people who believe in things, but don't know that they're actually true. And they believe what they have is truth because they don't know that it's actually true. They just believe that it's true. So they have this conviction, like you mentioned, the superstitions and all these things and stories of how to live, or what to do, or how you're going to be punished. And people believe them to be true. And if you'd ask them, you know, how does this work, or what is this? Well, what is this? You're referencing, well, isness is the truth, is something in reality. And people tell you things. Well, this is, and they can give an explanation, something is, or are, or be. And they're referencing that reality is a certain way. And so they're making a claim of truth, but it's not actually, like, what they're saying could be true, but the way they understand what they're talking about, they internally don't even know it to be true. Internally, it's a belief in the mechanisms and the processes of their mind and psychology. It's only a belief in it being true, but they don't actually know that it's true. Even though they believe it within themselves, they believe it to be true, they don't actually know that it's true. And I think this is a fundamental problem for getting people to, you know, change. We got to change the world and make it a better place. And we can give people all the details and go into finer details to give them steps and everything. But if we just give them steps, are they going to understand why these steps are the right way? Like, we're talking about steps. So you're going somewhere when you're walking up a staircase. Steps are the purposes to get somewhere. So when we're giving people steps, it's to go somewhere. Well, where are you going? Do you know why you're going there? And our goal is to get people to go towards a future of true freedom and remove enslavement in the aggregate so we can aggregately have true freedom. But a lot of people don't know that that's the destination. So they can come across steps, but they don't know the destination. Or they don't know why that's a destination they should have or they should be going in. Instead of going wherever they're going now, that they should make that a primary destination that they work towards, putting their time, energy, and effort in their life in order trying to get there. And to get there, well, there's requirements to get there. And that's the work to make that happen. But all these things, it's all interconnected and it is complex to understand. It's not something you can just understand in like 5 minutes and really remake your own, you know, your own map of my goals in life or what do I want to achieve or where do I want to go. So the map that they say they want to go to a destination, well, they need to alter their destination or have multiple destinations that they're working on getting at. And one of them would be the great work to end our enslavement. And people don't understand it because they don't know how to think. So they don't understand. They don't see, as I was mentioning before, you know, morality or the government is slavery. They don't see it because these are things that are metaphysical. They're beyond, that's what metaphysical means, just beyond the physical. So, you know, color itself is represented in the physical, but it's not a physical thing in itself. There is no thing that is blue itself. There is no thing that is red itself. This is what I explained in my metaphysical, philosophical metaphysics related to Aristotle and the categorization is. You have things that are substances like a plate, that's a primary substance, and then you have things that are accidental. So they're things, but they're not things in themselves. The primaries are things in themselves. Anyways, we don't need to get into that, but it's like this is all stuff that people should understand so they understand how thinking even works and how they make sense of the world so that they can understand how there's things that they're not seeing in the physical. And there's these metaphysical aspects like how government, you know, it's just an amorphous thing. And what's government? Well, it's buildings with people in it. It's not an actual thing in itself, but that thing is represented by the aggregation of people and buildings for a purpose of managing and controlling an area. And that's what government represents. So it's an abstraction. And they just look at it as something positive. Well, they're helping to manage society. They're helping to do things and provide us with things. And they just look at it as a benefit. And they've never actually looked at it in the categorical way as slavery, as a system of control of enslavement, because they don't even have the fundamentals, which is what you mentioned about morality. Because how can you define something as being immoral if you don't even know the definition of immorality? Same thing I was saying about truth. How can you know you even have truth if you don't even know the definition of truth? So they can't categorize things like this goes into the category of red, that goes into the category of blue. Well, what goes into the category of moral or immoral? Well, you need to know how to define it. And if you can't define moral or immoral or right versus wrong objectively, then you can't put things in boxes accurately. So you're putting things in, oh, here's this government, and here's people in government, and I'm putting that in the box of good, of moral, of right. But that's because they don't have accurate definitions. And that's why we do need to define things and get into finer detail, because the perception and conception people have of the world that they've been conditioned to accept is a false reality. It's a false perception of the way reality is, because that reality that they perceive is based on words, because the words are going to describe and relate and correspond to these metaphysical things like right and good and moral. And so they can understand the physical things because they're all around them and they can see them, but the metaphysical things, well, you need words and you need abstractions and concepts, and their conceptual frameworks are polluted and they're degraded. So they do not have the conceptual tools, the proper definitions to accurately define and categorize all the things that are, all the characteristics of things in reality. So they miscategorize and mislabel and misdefine, and then they have a false perception of the world and illusion that they live in.
Which takes us back to the beginning of the maze. If you've ever seen the movie The Labyrinth, you know, you can get pretty far in, and all of a sudden you take a wrong turn, you're back at the beginning of the maze. And that happens because you didn't really know where you're going, right? Like you're saying. So that brings me around to a word I'm excited to bring up. I love words, and I know you're a wordsmith as well. I'm driving home today, and I'm thinking about having this conversation with Chris Nelson, and I'm thinking, what kind of things does Chris do that are amazing? And he has this ability to break things down to their core and explain the little steps between things and do that in a very careful and calm manner that really impresses me, because you have certain abilities that I don't. And I was thinking about some words to describe it, and I was thinking about epistemology, you know, and that lands right what you're talking about. Without an understanding of what is what, epistemology means the theory of knowledge itself. Where do we get any information? How do we know anything's anything? Where do we start with, you know? And that's kind of like, at some point, any type of philosopher has to start with something, and that's the epistemology stage. What is what? What is reality itself? And so we could start there. I'll ask you that question, but I just wanted to say that logistics is the other word that came into my mind, and the logistics of how to get from here to there is what you're so superb at. And so I thought of a new word that I made up. You're an epistemologician, or another way to say it would be epistemologician, someone who's able to logistically explain how we get from a foundation to a finished product, you know. So maybe you could talk a little bit about epistemology and the foundation of knowledge principles that allow us to deal with these complex things that don't make sense.
Yeah, that's a good term. I like that, epistemologician.
So you got that's a title card.
Yeah. Change my name from now on. I'm not Chris Nelson, I'm epistemologician.
Yeah.
So this gets to the, you know, another fundamental of everything we've been talking about is how do you, this is what epistemology is, how do you know what you know, which is what I've talked about just recently. And I've gone into it in some of my earlier work, and I plan on getting back into it in even more detail in future work. But so how do you know what you know? So you can, everything, as soon as you're born until you die, everything around you influences you. So this is part of how you construct your self-image, your self-view, and the worldview. So that information can be misleading. People can tell you things that aren't necessarily true, and they can willfully deceive, so they can willfully lie, and then you can accept it, or they can be mistaken in what they're saying because they believe it's true, and they're going to tell you something that's false. And then the responsibility all comes upon yourself. This is why censorship is pathetic in terms of trying to protect people, because it doesn't protect people. All it's doing is infantilizing them and robbing them of the opportunity to be responsible for themselves, denying them responsibility. So it's, again, the controlling authoritative parent, the authority wants to prevent you from thinking for yourself. And that's what epistemology is so important for, being able to think for yourself. So how do you know what you know? Everything, this is what we have to do when we, you know, awaken at some point in our lives. We realize, you know, something's not right with the world. You're like, the world doesn't feel right. You know, at some point we're, you know, whatever, we're at a lonely place or we're in suffering, and we have more time on our hands maybe, and then we begin to think more, we begin to question more and doubt more and have more curiosity. That's how it all starts. And we have to, when you begin that journey, that spiritual journey, that knowledge quest, trying to figure things out, you know, that's one of the things we have to consider is, well, what, you know, usually it starts with the realization, like it could have been 9/11, where you were told something and then you came across information that showed that that was a lie. And then you ask yourself, what else have I been lied about? I've been lied to about. And then you cannot, the deeper one is, you know, what have you lied to yourself about? That's part of the shadow work, but it's figuring out, well, how do you know that what you've taken in, or what you've read, anything in your life, what you've been told, what you've read, what you've seen on TV, what you've heard in a podcast, and that information came in, how do you know that that was true? So it came in, and a lot of people can blindly accept it, too much of an open right brain. So you got to be open to information, but not just accept it all. And some people can have truth come in, but they reject it as falsity. So that's too much of a rigid left brain, too much like skepticism, where you're not even going to consider it. And so these are two methods where, you know, Soren Kierkegaard, that's one of the quotes Passio had, I think, since the first episode, was there's two ways to be fooled. One is to accept what isn't true, and the other one is to reject what is true. And so those are two troubles we can get into, but when we're talking about what we've taken in that wasn't true and that we did accept was true, or that it is true, but we don't know it's true. So how do you know what you know is actually truth? And I like to reference knowledge in two aspects. So you can have knowledge about something. You can tell me something, someone can tell me something, I can read something in a book, I can see it on TV or read it in the news or whatever. So you can have knowledge about a certain piece of information. So you know about this. But just because you know about something doesn't mean you know that it is true. So you can know about whatever, pick your pick of anything, but you don't know if that information that you receive, that you have now you have knowledge of that body of information, you don't know if it's actually true. So how do you know if it's true? Well, that's what reality is there for. If it's true, it exists either in reality now as something that repeats and persists, like you can have a cup on your desk, and well, that cup isn't too ephemeral. It has a long degree of persistence in reality. And some things don't persist. Some things are eventful. There are events that happen in time, and after they happen, well, they're done happening, and then they don't happen again unless they're created again, and then the event happens again. So there's different aspects of trying to verify things in reality that can be difficult. And ultimately, everything, if you can't verify it yourself, so, you know, there's a story about something that happened, and it might jive with other information you have, but how do you know that what the person's saying as new information is actually true? Can you verify it? Well, in a lot of cases, we can't verify it. The event, we weren't there. Maybe there's no recording of it. I'm getting with AI. Well, now that's very dubious, even with recordings. There's a whole trouble with that. But prior to that, you know, you could have recordings that even though you weren't there, you could verify because there's a recording, and or you could have been there. Otherwise, what we're engaging in, there's a lot. So this is an aspect of belief, and belief, as I refer to it, as something that you have trust in or loyalty in, or faith in. So I correlate belief with trust, loyalty, and faith. So belief isn't necessarily a negative thing, but it can be, because then you can engage in the false categorization of putting things that you believe in, or that you have loyalty in, or faith in, or that you trust in, as being true. So you could have trust in someone, you could have loyalty towards someone, you could have faith in someone, and they tell you something, and then you're going to accept it as true. And it could be what they said is true. So from their perspective, it happened to them, so they know it's true, and they experienced it, or they were able to verify it in something that did happen in reality. So they know it internally as something that is epistemologically true. They know it as a body of knowledge, and they know it to be true. But when they give it to you, and you could do the same to other people, you could know something is true and provide it to other people. But when they receive it, anything we receive, we don't know if it's true unless we can verify it. And this is what's not being done in the majority of society, is there's no verification. It's, how does this jive with previous information? Does it connect well? Does it synchronize in it? Does it have some synchronicities with the previous information? How many connection points? Well, this connects over here with this thing. Okay, it feels like it's good. And these are all things that are done like at a subconscious level, and people like intuit their way into truth. So they end up accepting things as true, which might be true, but they don't know it to be true. So they know it as something, they know about that thing that someone told them, but they don't know that thing is true or not. It could be true, but they engage in, they put it into the box of truth, but what they actually have is a belief in it being true. They have faith in it being true. They trust in it being true. And then after that, you have loyalty in it being true. So then when other information can come across that contradicts it, you engage in an attachment, because something that you have loyalty and faith and trust in, well, you can become attached to it. So this can apply to individuals or groups or ideas of groups like government or a religion or a church or whatever. And you can have trust, loyalty, and faith, and believe what they tell you, and then you can become attached to it. And then when contradictory information comes in, well, then you engage in that rejection of it. You're not even going to consider it, because your attachment, you're in your emotional aspect, your psychological, emotional aspect, you have an attachment to something, to an individual, a group, an institution, or a piece of information that you believe is true, and you're not even going to consider whether, you're not even going to engage in reconsidering whether it's true or not, because of that attachment. So these are like the underlying psychological mechanisms that are taking place whenever everything that we've received in our lives as information that we then take in, and like, we're not talking about the rejection one, but it applies to that one as well in a different way, because then we're going to ignore it in the future. But now we're talking about the things that we take in, and they go on, they're actually beliefs because we haven't verified them. And then we go around after we receive those things, and then we go propagate that belief to others, and we make claims of is or being or are. We categorize it in that category of truth, or we're saying this is, and then we explain something. And as soon as we make a statement about something, we're making a claim of truth, a claim of what reality is now or was in the past, even though we weren't able to verify it. And then that continues. Then other people are influenced, and then they believe it, and they haven't verified it, and then they propagate it. And that's how things can spread. You know, the saying of the lie goes around the world 50 times before the truth has a chance to be uttered, something like that. And so this is all part of self-knowledge that people need to learn and aren't taught. And then you have the daunting task of figuring all this out whenever you get your awakening and you're starting to be curious and ask questions and question authority and question, did this really happen? You know, it took me a while to get to this. So, you know, there's all that surface level of the effects, questioning the symptoms and the effects before you get down to these causal understandings of within yourself, of how your own processes of receiving information and processing that information and how you even categorize it and the results of that, of, you know, accepting a bunch of things as true, but not really knowing that they are.
Yeah, and like the first step for initiation is to be honest with yourself, and learning to be deadly honest with yourself is the most important tool to doing any of this work. We can all look up words and etymology and we can all get left-brained and talk about things, but you know, the crux of the matter is how we live and the choices we make in life and what we do with our time. When I looked up epistemology on EdemOnline, it comes from epi and histastai. Well, I mean, there's always more than way to look at these things, but one interpretation of the derivation of the word would be to stand, make, or be firm. So to stand near, to know how to do, to understand, overstand. So to stand or make firm, you can imagine stem is in that word, epi, stem, a stem like that holds up a plant, right? So it's finding something to be firm about. And that's a difficult job in this world because as we see, there's a lot of clashing ideologies and belief systems as we've described. What's interesting about the word logistics is that it kind of comes from lodge, which, you know, we talk about the Masons. I guess that's one of the earliest uses of the term lodge was the shelter. I mean, is the where lodge could mean, but somewhere I saw a workshop of a group of Masons from the mid 14th century. One of the early uses of that term lodge, but logistics is quartering troops, you know, moving one encampment to another. But basically logistically means moving things around. So how do we logistically go from knowing nothing to walking up this stairway of knowledge we're describing of elevating our consciousness? Well, if you don't believe there's any objective truth to reality to begin with, then it's like I described in a previous episode, everything's a funhouse. Why would you want to start going upstairs if they could disappear at any moment? You're going to fall into nothing. You know, we couldn't even have conversation if there was no objective reality. But within this objective reality, we're living this subjective experience where we see things different and live experientially. And then we have this amazing capability for imagination. So we're always telling ourselves little stories about what's happening and trying to figure out how much. And it really comes down to how much work a person wants to put in to do that discovery process. You want to initiate that process. You want to go through these series of contradictions. And I think one of the skills that is needed if folks are interested in taking this journey of initiation and being, like I said, deadly honest with ourselves, is we really have to be like that dog that barks at every noise inside of our mind when there's disagreements, contradictions, paradoxes. And that doesn't mean that we give up at that point, say, oh, there's two things that clash that I can't figure out. It means we keep going at that point and keep working on it. And so I thought maybe you could share with us some of your experiences of realizing things. And it's one thing, like you said, to kind of know about something. Like I've always imagined someone who is studying their whole life about swimming. They've taken swimming classes. They studied every book about swimming. They studied the moves in the air, but they've never actually been in the water. You don't know how to swim. Right. And that's the reality we're talking about. And so maybe you could describe some things in your life that, you know, how you came to realize things so we can help other people with the logistics of how that works.
Well, how I came to realize things, there's many things in life. So we're talking about like philosophical things like principles.
You know, one thing I was thinking, me personally, like when I first came into the idea of weather engineering, weather manipulation, it drove me crazy because you'd find so much information online that says, oh, that's a bunch of crazy conspiracy stuff. But then when I would actually start looking for myself and thinking about it and taking anecdotal thoughts, and then the more I'd study, the more there was a conflict in my mind. And so I could have just given up and be like, oh, it's too complicated. I can never figure this out. But I had to live with that conflict for well over a year before I felt settled enough to feel like I've discovered enough truth to know how I feel about this topic, even though it's a complex one. And I think that process is difficult. It's not always easy. And so I was thinking maybe you have some examples in your life, or you could help break it down for people, how to work through things that seem hard, that make you want to give up. How do you keep going? How do you work through it, even though there's something in your mind that's disagreeing?
I can't right off the bat think of a specific thing, but the process in general, I have an infographic, because what you're relating is maybe cognitive dissonance, where you have conflicting information. So something that you once formally thought was true, and then you have new information, and then you don't know where to go. You don't know what's up or down, so to speak. And so you don't know, weather engineering. Then you come across it and what is this? Oh, this is a bunch of crazy shit. Well, is it crazy shit? Well, maybe it isn't. Maybe I should look into it. Is that what you're talking about? Something.
Yeah, I think what people really struggle with is having that devil's advocate in their mind, or having that disagreement, or having two disagreeing thoughts in their mind. And the easy solution, the black and white checking board solution, is just choose one or the other, left, right, go, stop. But the complexity, the challenge for the philosopher is to start somewhere. And start where somewhere solid, like we said, epistemology, there is a such thing as truth. Then what? How do we logistically start working through these problems where it seems like there's no answer and everybody's saying different stuff, you know?
Yeah, this relates to what I was saying in categorization. So I did a presentation on, it was a small thing, 20 minutes, on belief. What is belief? And you got to categorize things. So that's what we've been talking about. Things come in and you don't know. So at first you got to say, okay, I know about it, but I don't know if that is true or not. So when it comes in, it's first, I don't know. And then as you can look into it, you can develop certain categorizations. So you can be this has, this is possibly true, or this is probably true. And then maybe this is true. Or you can say, I don't know if it's true, but I believe that that did happen, but I don't know if it did happen. So those are all healthy categorizations. But the unhealthy one is, like I said, where you think that you have the truth and you're going to say, this is true, and you're going to categorize it as truth, but what you actually have is just a belief of something being true. So there's no problem with having beliefs or even believing something to be true, but you're not going to talk about it as if it is true. You're not going to say, this is this and this is this. You're going to say, I think, or I believe this, is the way it is. I have a lot of beliefs about ancient Egypt. And, I can't verify them in the way language started out. I have beliefs about the pictographic method being the first one in language. But I can't prove any of this. It's just what I believe. I have a logical argument behind it, but it's something I believe and that I think is true, but it's not something I'm going to definitely say, this is true. But a lot of people, that's the miscategorization they engage in. And when we're talking about, where do you start? And we're talking about cognitive dissonance and holding two things in the mind. This is what you got to do. And when it comes in, so the contradictory information, you can have accepted something that was true or have accepted something that was false and you believe it to be true. And when the new information comes in, this is in my cognitive dissonance chart, you're going to feel something usually. Usually it's not just an intellectual, it can be if you've done a lot of work on yourself, where you can recognize that, look at this information and, it doesn't match with this other information. So is my other information false? And this new information is true, or is what I've actually accepted, is that actually true? And this new information is actually false. But a lot of people don't engage in that process. There's a process where you got to question things and be curious and doubt. And that's what we're getting at, is this process of not just accepting one or the other. You got to start off where you got to admit to yourself, I don't know. And then you can look into it. And that's a hard thing for people to do. I have another part on that where this I don't know, well, there's a question and an answer. And when you don't have an answer, well, that's what I don't know is, well, I don't know if this is true or I don't know about that. I don't know is having a gap. So when there's a question to something, when you ask, well, how did we get here? What's the purpose in life or all these other things? Well, those are questions. And, well, do you have an answer? Yeah, okay, you came up with an answer. You read an answer. Someone provided you with an answer. Well, that's information. That's, you know about it, okay? But is that answer true? I can say 2 + 2, 5. Oh, someone gave me the answer 5. Well, there you go. There's the answer to 2 + 2. It's 5. Well, how do you know that that is the answer? Because it's not the answer. 2 + 2 is 4. And this is what applies to everything. The answer, you might not have the answer. And there are some questions that maybe you'll never have an answer. And you have to get comfortable with that. Otherwise, the default position when there's a question and there's no answer is, well, here's my worldview or your self-view, and you're on a plane or a path, and it's making holes. So instead of having something solid, you're like, it's full of holes, and that's referencing of a gap, a darkness, a void in your comprehension of reality, because you want to make sense. We're all trying to make sense. Like you said, we tell stories to ourselves, we make narratives. And so when we do that, well, we're trying to answer things, right? We can come up with answers. We can imagine things. We can come up with imaginative answers, create answers. We're very creative. And we can bullshit ourselves. We can lie to ourselves. But the purpose of those lies that we accept is so that we fill in those gaps, those holes, the abyss, the void, the darkness. Because those holes in our comprehension, they automatically create a discomfort. Because then you're not going to know about something in the world. Or you know that something's there, but you don't understand it enough. So these are, it can create insecurity and anxiety of not knowing something. And the future can have that as well. Anxious about the future and anxiety, insecurity. And well, this applies to information as well. Not knowing something, having a question, but not having an answer. So when information comes in, do you know it's true? No. Well, get comfortable with that. And get over the insecurity, the doubt, the discomfort, the anxiety, and the fear of that creating a hole, a void, a gap, an abyss in your comprehension of reality and your worldview and your attempt to make sense of things. Some things aren't going to make sense right away, so you got to accept that you're not going to necessarily understand or have an answer to everything. And then you can move forward from there and look into it, try to figure it out. Like I said, sometimes you won't be able to figure it out. Some answers, we're never going to know definitively the answer to it, but we can come up with ideas and try to validate them and verify them. That's what the scientific process is you have a hypothesis, you have an idea, and then you're going to create a procedure, steps. We've been talking about steps. Well, you're going to make a bunch of steps. You're going to say, oh, I'm going to take step 1, 2, 3. I'm going to make these steps. I'm going to see, do these steps get me to some information at the end, and your observations of carrying out that procedure, and you're going to observe what happens along the way and at the end, and then you're going to see, you're going to relate those observations of what happened in reality with your initial hypothesis of what you're expecting to get or what you think is going to happen. And then you'll have to reevaluate. If it didn't match up, then you can be like, okay, I'm going to change the steps. I'm going to try it this way this time. And that's our learning process. That's how we learn how to do things, you know, riding a bike. You know, it's all like mechanics of the body and balance, you know, teaching my son to ride a bike. And I keep telling him, yeah, you're going to fall down. I told him at the beginning, you're going to fall down a lot. And, you know, you just got to keep trying. And eventually you're going to understand, you're going to learn how your body works and how to apply pressure on your feet and how to balance your body. And it's not something you're going to understand all at once. And it's going to take time, and then the pieces are going to come together. And that's what we got to do about everything in life. And that's the trivium process, basically, is the scientific method. And everything is, you have some input, and then you can draw a conclusion. So you can process that information and do an output within yourself of like an idea or a theory. And you know, someone can give you information. So riding a bike and be like, okay, try it like this. I'm going to push like this. Oh, no, that didn't work. I fell down right away. Okay, what if I push this way instead? And you're going to try it a different way. And you're going to get a certain result, a different result. And that's the, you observe. And then you feedback and like, oh, well, that felt a bit better. Okay, let me go with this and modify it a bit a different way. I'll apply it a different way. I'll move my foot in a different way or something like that. And this is how we engage in like everything that we learn from experience. You mentioned that earlier as well. And that's an important thing to, especially in like how to do things in life is, you know, you can't just have the theory of swimming is you gotta eventually get in the water to actually swim because your theory isn't going to match up to the actual thing. You might understand.
Doesn't hold water.
What?
The theory doesn't hold water.
Yeah, that's a good pun. But, you know, you're going to get in, you got the theory, but you're not going to be swimming right away usually. And you're going to have to piece together all the information you got and apply it in the situation to, and then maybe like 5 to 10 seconds later, you'll be swimming. But immediately you're like, you know, you're trying to figure it out. You're in the new environment and you're like, okay, I got to move my arms. And then, you know, it's working half-assed. And then after 10 seconds, you're moving your arms better and it's working better for you. But yeah, the experience part. And a lot of this is like unconscious. You know, we're not analyzing our foot position and direct angle and how much pounds per square inch we're applying to the pedal or anything. All these things are, it's an amazing process, this intuitive learning process. And, you know, a lot of the things we can learn in that intuitive way, but a lot of the things we can't learn in an intuitive way. And we need specific references and concepts and abstractions of concepts and words and definitions in order to build up and to make sense of all that complexity and organize it in a way so that we can make sense of it and bring simplicity to the variable, like almost infinite complexity that is in the universe.
Yeah, I love how you're describing real science as opposed to today's scientism, where we just believe the headlines and go inside because they told us and we're all diseased, you know, as opposed to doing the actual science, like what happens when I do this? And then reality responds. If there was no such thing as objective reality, you would never get the same response or, you know, you'd never know if there's going to be a stare after the next one. So, you know, understanding that there is a such thing as objective reality and then how do I, you know, get around inside of that? And then I think anything that you can imagine being good at, whether it's boxing, swimming, like we were talking about, gardening, speaking, it all requires training and practice to build the skill. You don't just go out your first time, you might have a little beginner's luck, but everything requires training. And so I think there's training required in learning to have a disagreement with one thing and not being able to just know the answer right away, to struggle with an idea. And I think that's kind of what I was getting at, because I remember in my process, as I was describing with weather engineering, that wasn't the only one. There were a lot of things I struggled with. And one question one can ask yourself, is this a mystery that I'm grappling with that may not be able to be solved? Or is it a conspiracy that can be, you know, I can get to the bottom of it to an extent, you know, I can figure something out. Is there something to be figured out? You know, so I think asking more questions, you know, like I remember they call it the terrible twos when you have kids. But for me, it was more like the three when they start saying, no, I don't wanna. Why? Why should I do that? You know, like they start really like engaging that aspect. And then somewhere as we grow older, I feel like a lot of people lose it, the ability to keep asking those questions. Why is that important? Why should I care? Why should I be doing that? We have to keep going through that exercise and training of push-ups of asking questions inside of our mental construct and not give up so easy. And I think it helps a lot to have other people to discuss these things with, and that's sorely missing in today's world. So I always encourage group discussions and having these philosophy discussions with people. But like the manifestation process, that's not taught, right? Like trying to explain that the world of reality, of physical reality that we're experiencing and touching, everything we can see out here started with a thought and then an idea and then became reality in that order and not the opposite. And that's a pretty scary concept for people that are living a very material-based life, you know? And, you know, like you're saying, the balance between the physical and the mental and the spiritual is a difficult dance, you know, and a lot of opposites and things to be confused with on that path. But what are some practical advice you might give just for people? Go to Launchpad. Some of the things that you came across early on, maybe. Basics, places to get started, places to start asking questions. What would you recommend people look into? Or
I really like, I figured out a lot of these things myself, but in reading books as well, that really helps. Like
in books you don't necessarily agree with, or speakers that might say the opposite of what you think?
Well, that's if you're trying to determine, like, if there's two or three sides to a story, for example, that's saying, we'll look into both sides to see, well, what are the arguments for each? Are they logically consistent? Is there evidence? And then you can see, you can make up your own mind, a judgment, you know, possibly an inclination towards which one is more probably true. Even if you're not able to determine the truth yourself, you can say, well, this one makes more sense. This one is more probably truth because the arguments are more sound and there's actual evidence versus the other one, which is just maybe calling people names and putting doubt into their minds that it's not possible. And yeah, so it depends on the case. But like if you're trying to figure out how to think and learn better, then yeah, read books on the trivium or speakers that talk about it and go in depth in the process so you can understand these concepts of knowledge and how to come to understanding. And yeah, so that helps with the inner realm of working on, because this is all working on yourself to become a better person, because you require to know these aspects of yourself in order to help in that process of becoming a better person so that your behavior can be better. And that has a minute impact, but is a necessary impact on the aggregate of everyone together, everyone's behaviors, and the human world that we create. So resources, you know, you can, I'm sure there's more books now than when I first looked into it, like 3 years ago. And I bought that Sister Miriam Joseph book. And yes, I think there's been more popularity with the trivium since then. And there's probably a lot more books now. I have one that's a black little book by Wooden Books. I think the same one that did the Quadrivium book series. They did the Quadrivium before the trivium, and then the trivium eventually got released. But yeah, so there's books on it. You know, books on logic, maybe. I haven't really read books on logic. I have a lot of books that I want to read, but I don't. Logic, I guess, was more of an innate quality that I had, as opposed to other people who may have less propensity to think in a logical way. I don't know.
I think that's an important point, that people do learn very differently. You know, and like I come from kind of probably a little bit more of a storytelling, intuitive, trying to reach people from the heart. And you tend to have more of a left brain approach, giving someone steps and charts and spelling things out succinctly. And we all kind of are going to be a little different in that way. And I think a part of it's learning to know yourself, which is, again, the self-work and being deadly honest with yourself and noticing when we get emotional about a thing, then maybe that's something to look at a little closer. Or if something feels really scary when you think about it, well, maybe that's because you're afraid to think about it, because there's a hole, like you were describing, in your path of understanding or knowledge, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I was mentioning with the cognitive dissonance. I forgot. I mentioned it. You'll have emotional cues when it comes in that, you know, you could have anxiety or stress or discomfort or shame or guilt or anger or sadness. you know, and the information that comes in that contradicts how you see yourself or the way you see the world, some piece of information. And anyways, I have that chart. People can go look into it. It's another chart, obviously. The detailed steps on how to deal with cognitive dissonance and the positive path and the negative path to take.
Yeah, I really want folks to go on over to evolveconsciousness.org. And Chris has put together an incredible collection of videos, infographics is the tab right in the middle you can hit. And that can be extremely helpful for people. Like I said, we're all different. We all learn a little differently. But anything else you wanted to share before we close up tonight, Chris? Things you got coming up? Things on your mind that we haven't finished talking about?
Still working on finishing the Law of Freedom series, which is a sub-series within Natural Law, the Science of Morality series that I started doing in 2023. So there were four parts, and the Law of Freedom is like the fifth part. And I have the Great Work Launchpad, so that I'm interspersing the Law of Freedom, Natural Law series with the Great Work Launchpad, Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern. And so another resource people can learn on how to think. Well, you can go to my site, like Chris mentioned, on the infographics, and there I have all my infographics. And so that's like a right brain mixed with the left brain modality, where it's a visual learning. You can learn with seeing how these abstract concepts are connected in a visual way, in a processing flow visually to help make sense of them. I know it's helpful for many people, and I'll leave it there.
Yeah, that really speaks to that whole intelligence. I've done that a similar slide that Mark Passio also did, where, you know, intelligence is not just being book smart. That's what people usually think of that word, but the intel on one side, and then the gen on the other side, the generative principle, and the I in the center. So it's like I'm here in the middle, trying to find the balance between this part of myself that wants all this logical information, and then this other part of myself that wants to kind of dance around and sing about it, you know, and finding the harmony and the structure and making them turn into something beautiful is the alchemy of transcending this matrix that we're in. And so I think, you know, you've done a beautiful job of helping people on that journey. And here's one personal question maybe you can fill out towards the end of the show here. I'm curious, a lot of the stuff we talk about is hard. You know, we're asking people to do this hard work, to take the black pill, look at reality for what it is, to be honest with yourself about all the stuff you don't want to think about, go through all this emotional turmoil. And a lot of times it sounds like I'm advertising people a really rough, sad, difficult journey. You're like, here, go through all this struggle, it's going to be great. But it's not, we're not doing it because it's going to be great. We're doing it because it's the right thing to do. That being said, 2014, you said, in all this time, I'm curious how you feel differently as a person from when you first started realizing these things to the point when you started putting your name out on the internet in your face and showing up and making all this information. Looking back, how has it changed you? I'm curious.
Well, this relates to the aspect of, if you want to know something better, teach it. And that's totally true. Like, you can think, you know, you can, oh, I listened to this and I read so many books and all this stuff. And you're like, oh, yeah, I totally understand that. And then when you go to teach it, then you can be like, yeah, how much do you really understand it? And then you're going to be, ideally, you're going to, this is part of the questioning thing, you try to find holes in things, try to find, how is this true? How is this not true? Does, you know, try to bring in other things to try to disprove it. So when I go in deeper, I'm trying to figure out, how can I look at it and be like, okay, does this, if I look at it from here and I try to bring it from this way or explain it this way, does it make it look true? Or does this, okay, and then I can spend a lot of time and do a bunch of like stuff and notes and infographics and flowcharts on paper and stuff. And or when you listen to someone else, like I've listened to Passio and I'm like, wow, that's not true, and like that's bullshit. And then I'm like, well, what if it is true? And then I get, and then you got to mull it over, and you're like, hey, I can like intuit that it's true, but it doesn't make sense the way he's saying it. So the specific words might be like what I'm hung up on. So I'm going to try to like explain it using different words and in more detail to like explain how that is true, that, you know, it can be misinterpreted by people, and, you know, get down deeper. And I totally forgot what you originally asked me, something about, totally forgot. You're muted. You're still muted. Muted.
I was describing, you know, I was curious about your own journey since you started doing this work. And so it makes sense. You're going into that, explaining how much you do learn from teaching. Yeah.
So it's about doing, like I said, doing what's right and fulfilling your responsibility to create a more moral world. Because if you want, freedom, do you want freedom or do you want slavery? Well, if you say you want slavery, you're really fucking self-loathing and you hate yourself a lot. But then if you just say you want freedom, but you're not working to create the freedom, well, then you're still in self-loathing, still in some capacity of self-hatred. You still lack self-love because you haven't activated yourself. You haven't engaged in the behavior, the action that's going to bring about that thing that you say that you want, which is, those are the two choices. Do you want freedom or slavery? Okay, well, if you want freedom, do we have freedom? And then you got to be honest with yourself. No, we don't have true freedom because we still have slavery. So then do you want that slavery? Well, if you do, then you're in a lot of self-loathing. So most people, pretty much everyone will say, no, I don't want the slavery. I want the freedom. So do you want it? Are you just saying you want it? Or do you actually want it? Do you want to be part of creating it? Or just want to say it like, oh, well, I'll take it if it comes, but I'm not going to, you know, do anything to make it happen. So then clearly you're still in a self-loathing capacity and a self-hatred in some degree, and you lack self-care. You lack self-love. You don't love yourself enough. You don't care about yourself enough to even do the work to take yourself out of slavery, because you just admitted that, yeah, there is slavery. And you're living in it. So either you're going to engage in work to try to take you out of the slavery, or you're not. And then you can, with that recognition, well, then until you engage in it, well, then you got to recognize that you're lacking self-love, that you're lacking self-care, that you don't care about yourself enough, that you don't love yourself enough, because you're not engaging in the requirements to create that condition that you say you want, the condition of true freedom. And so that has to, that's one of the motivators. And that was the thing behind my presentation at Funnel for the truly caring about being enslaved. You got to care about your own enslavement. Ultimately, you got to care about the enslavement of others, but you got to care. That was my last slide, you know.
Yeah.
Truly care about being enslaved, that you're enslaved. You got to care that you are enslaved and then do something about it.
It's like care or not to care. That's the question. To be free or not to be free. That's the real question. Yeah. You know? And it's not, you know, if everybody was putting in the work that Chris Nelson's putting in, we'd be free. We wouldn't have slavery right now. Even if, you know, 90% of people were putting in that kind of work, I think we'd be in great shape right now. So it is possible. We just need a lot more Chris Nelsons and Chris Jansons out there, you know, putting some effort and care into the thing that matters more than anything else, which is, you know, what's right. So, yeah, I really appreciate the way you've broken things down. Chris, I really like the part you said about the holes, and that so jives with the way I see the problem with living the life without taking on this morality thing really seriously and this inner work thing really seriously is that there's a lot of holes in front of you, you know, and you're just guessing, you know, whether the ground's going to be firm in front of you or whether your path makes any sense if you're not asking these questions of why am I going this way? Why am I doing this? Why am I letting myself be forced into this? And so I guess I'm trying to inspire people too that when you do actually start teaching these or attempting to teach principles and the things that really matter, it brings quite a bit of joy within the self to reach new realization, new levels of comfort of your own being in your own skin and realizing your own capability to have conversations about things and see things for what they are, and to have the excitement and curiosity to keep wanting to do that. And, you know, if you don't feel good about yourself, it's hard to have that excitement. You know, if you're just living on the hopium, your inner self gets depressed, right? So, yeah, that's kind of my last words. Anything else you want to say, Chris, to our audience before we cut out tonight?
It takes dedication and persistence and keep going at it. It's not a one-time thing where I'm going to write one article or do one video. It's a continual renewal of your will, not just activating yourself once, but that's the hard part. You're going to be like, oh, I'm going to do it once. Whew, all right, I did it once. Then you got to do it again and again and again and again and again and again. And that's the harder part for people to get into, but it's also sort of becomes easier once you get started, because that's the whole thing with momentum in the initial, you know, the inertia, where there's that resistance to get started, but then you get the momentum and you can keep going and it gets easier. But at first it can seem daunting, and yes, it's a lot of work, but you got to have that care to motivate you, to drive you. And if you don't, then yeah, it's going to seem daunting, insurmountable, impossible, undesirable, and you're just going to do other things instead because you prefer to do those things.
Yeah, so be inspired, folks. Check out evolveconsciousness.org. Fantastic tools to help you on your journey. And I don't know if we're going to do it again next week, but check out the One Great Work Launchpad Chris put together. And I hope folks were draw some inspiration from this talk, and I really appreciate having you, and we'll see you next time, folks. Evil is the destruction of freedom. Thank you.